Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Star Trek, number one fan. TIE Fighter.
May the Force be with you.
That's it.
Dumbledore.
Did I send you those t-shirts? I was bombarding Hunter with them the other night. It was like so many funny-ass t-shirts, man. Just the mashup stuff.
I'm not sure if you did, but you'll have to send them to me.
I've become addicted to t-shirts lately because I found some sources for cheap, you know, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you go online and you go to, like, awesometees.whatever, and
yeah.
You know, they want, like, $30 for a freaking t-shirt.
It varies place to place. It varies place to place. There are some places I've gotten t-shirts, like one of those daily day shirts a day for, like, $10-$15 with shipping. And there are other places where they have printed shirts. Like, do either of you watch Parks and Recreation?
I have.
Sometimes.
Well, there was a specific episode where all the cast had a specific shirt on for, like, an event. And there was a place that sold a perfect replica of that shirt. So I bought one for the girlfriend. It was $30, but it's a really nice shirt. It was really well done. So, yeah, it varies. So I'll have to see some of these. But, yeah. Folks, we have a guest. We're kind of talking about a specific game tonight, sort of. For as long as we can. Joining us is friend of the show and frequent wingman in X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, Hunter Mullins.
Hey!
Welcome back, Hunter. You hung out with us for the Elite Dangerous launch party, like you said. By the way, Wings launched today, the beta of 1.2. Have either of you tried it?
I am downloading it even now.
Okay, I played a little bit earlier on Twitch, and I flew a Fur de Lance around. I didn't like it that much. It's kind of unmaneuverable. But I couldn't figure out how to get Wings to work. I don't know. I thought you can make Wings with AI players, but I couldn't figure out how to do that.
Yeah, Crystal Bernard was so hot back in the day.
What?
On Wings.
Was that the redhead?
No, the blonde girl.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get into Wings until later.
I never got into Wings, but I watched with the sound off.
Oh, I didn't watch it at the time, but after I became a fan of Tony Shalhoub, thanks to Galaxy Quest, I started watching it again. It's fairly funny.
Yeah.
It was on for a while. So we are here mostly tonight. It's kind of a hodgepodge show, but we wanted to talk about a game we've been revisiting every week for like the last couple of months now.
Yeah, it's almost like going to see somebody in a nursing home. It's just like we just stop in once a week and give TIE Fighter a pat on the head and, you know, then go on about our lives. But
it's kind of like we're visiting this uncle that, you know, is in the nursing home that we never really talked to for years. And then all of a sudden we find out they have this crazy life and these amazing stories. And so we go back every week to hear some ridiculous shit about their younger days because it's amazing.
As opposed to your other uncle, you know, that uncle that every family has, George Lucas.
Yes, you come sit on your lap a lot. You don't know why.
Yeah, it's like. You know,
he's kind of Biden. He's kind of pulling a Biden.
Let me tell you about George Lucas, how this works. Right. So episode one, it's like you go over for Thanksgiving dinner. Right. And then he like comes up behind you and sticks his dick in your ear. And you're like, oh, wow. God, Uncle George, Jesus. But then he's like, OK, well, come back next year. I swear to God, I won't do that. And he does it again. But you keep going back. I don't understand. So at some point you wonder, like, do I like the dick in my ear?
Well, because he used to be awesome, and he used to be crazy Uncle George, and then he got really lame.
No,
he had a lot of cool toys, he had a lot of cool models, and he let you play with them.
That's true. He did let me play with his toys. But when I went, it was a revelation. We went to Disney, and I sat through Captain EO, and I saw how batshit fucking crazy George Lucas was back then.
That blows my mind that they still have Captain EO.
Oh my God, they brought it back.
Do you remember when that came out, how big a deal that was?
Oh, it was like a supreme deal.
84, was it?
But you know what? It's got some 3D in there. It's like that blurry 3D. But the glasses and it looks like, you know, somebody put like they licked them or something. It's not good, right? But the 3D, when they do it, it's like the thing comes out of the screen and it's like sitting like right at the end of your nose. You know, it's like super obvious, like, woo, look at me, 3D. You know, which whenever I've gone to see 3D movies, they don't do that. And I wish that they did, because I would pay to go to the 3D movie if it was actually the spectacle of, oh my God, this stuff is jumping out of the fucking screen. But they just use it to like throw extra depth in and stuff. Like in Avatar, all the displays and stuff look magical because of the 3D, right? Like all those see-through monitors and shit, magical. Right. But it was super subtle. But Captain EO is more like, I'm going to ram a puppet up your nose. Right? Like, here it comes. But it's also weird that that is where Star Trek's Borg got invented, and the Borg Queen, because the
what?
Yeah, God, what's her name? Who played Morticia Adams in the Adams Family movies? Shit, I can't think of her name. She's the Borg Queen, and she... Yeah, I can't...
No, Angelica Houston. Really? She's the Borg... What?
Yeah,
no, she
Angelica
was the Borg Queen.
Not in the Star Trek movie, but in Captain fucking EO she is. She comes
they had
down.
The, what?
Yeah, dude. Here, let me show you a picture. All
right. I can't look right now. I'm full screening. I can't look. Yeah, I'll have to see it later. I believe you though.
Oh, it's fucking
Wait,
amazing.
Who'd you say? Angelica
Houston.
Yeah, well, there was like four people that played like her, but whatever.
Yeah.
But Angelica Houston was one.
Right, and really? She's a cross between the Borg Queen and Giger's alien in the
yeah
movie.
She was in Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. That was crazy.
Yeah, here let me I gotta just whip this picture out. This is an actual Captain EO picture.
What out?
I'll put it in the chat and you can just kind of look at it when you can.
I'll look at it later. I can't look at it at the moment.
But it's like, oh my God! Here, I'll send it to Hunter. Dude, tell me there isn't some Giger happening. In that picture.
It's almost quicker just to copy and paste trying to open them.
So,
yeah, it's just like, okay, so she comes, Angelica...
Wait, what?
Exactly. You see
that? That looks something out of Alien.
Exactly, right? So it's some Giger-looking shit, but she's like the Borg Queen, because she comes down out of the ceiling on hoses, and she doesn't have a lower body. It's just a torso and arms and a head. And then Michael Jackson has to have a dance fight with her. And then he starts, like, shooting laser beams and stuff, right? And then, meanwhile, there's, like, space puppets that are running around. And it kind of gives me a Farscape vibe. Like, how the Jim Henson effect
does.
Is happening.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. So I was sitting there, and Joan and I are just looking at each other, like, in fucking shock. Like, oh, my God. Like... Not only was Lucas that bad back then, I mean, this is like right after Return of the Jedi. It's like hot on the heels of Return of the Jedi, right?
Yeah, and, it was like 84 or 85, wasn't
yeah,
it? Something like that.
And the stuff that goes on in here, it's like if you mashed Alien, Star Trek, and like Farscape together and fucking Fraggle Rock. I mean, it's just like, oh my God. So it was him and Spielberg, and I forget who else was all involved in this mess, but it was nuts. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm just like, oh my God, I see where the last 20 years of sci-fi has come from. Like, everything that I've seen in the last 20 years in a science fiction movie is in fucking Captain EO, and I can't stand it, you know?
Imagine how mind-blowing that must have been when you saw it back in the day.
Well, yeah, because – well, then – but then it would just be like when the Borg come on Star Trek, it's like, oh, yeah, Captain EO. You know? Because, dude, it's guys with hoses coming out of their heads and, like, black – you know, the fucking Borg. And they step out of, like, boxes in the wall, right, and then come out to attack Michael Jackson, and he has to dance them off. And, yeah, I mean, it's like I can't even.
Wow.
I can't even. Wow. So Uncle George – was always a bit weird, but I think that other people got in there and like directed his creativity in sane directions. And then whenever he got too big for people to control, then he just, you know.
Yeah.
As I've argued this with friends before, the third one, Return of the Jedi, was kind of where things started to go.
Oh yeah.
Him.
Absolutely.
Oh, I think it's Howard the Duck that broke him. That's what I think.
I don't even want to talk about Howard the Duck.
I think Howard the Duck finally made him snap.
Howard the Duck broke something.
Well, the fact that Howard the Duck made an appearance in Guardians of the Galaxy was enough to like make me go.
No, that was pretty great. I'm sorry. That was pretty great. Anyway.
I would have laughed more if it was like a stormtrooper or something.
Yeah, but dude, Howard the Duck, when you put Howard the Duck in your movie, that's the sign that your movie doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just like your
that's
movie
true.
Is
all right.
That's true. So yeah, we have discovered over the last couple of months or so that X-Winger versus TIE Fighter is surprisingly awesome. Like,
oh yeah, we were.
I don't know about you guys. Huh?
I forgot we were going to talk about TIE Fighter.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how we got started.
Oh, okay.
At least tonight. But yeah, like for years I wrote this game off as, oh, it sucks. Oh, no one wants to play X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. Who wants to play that? And wow, I was so wrong. I was so wrong.
Well, I think it's a game that was definitely ahead of its time though, because.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
You know, there's like system like that and like the Dreamcast, you know, like you had these technologies that were out at a certain point in time, but they were just too much for what people could really do with them.
Yeah.
You know? And so like now with like the wonders of like Internet of Everything, you can, you know, hook up all the stuff and do all the things.
Well, I think that they didn't do a great job of selling it at the time. Like, yeah, they told us it was going to be multiplayer, but they didn't really give us the hint that it was going to be really nothing like X-Wing or TIE Fighter in terms of a linear story or anything like – or, you know, campaigns or anything like that. And so when I tried it, I, like, played against some internet randos over whatever crappy DSL I had at the time, and it was awful. And I was like, screw this. This is just like arena combat. What do I care about this? And when Balance of Power came out, I was like, too late. I don't care. Yes. You know, you, it's time to move on.
Yeah, my thing with it was I could play the single player, and there was a couple of times that I went on multiplayer, but it would be like with, you know, two other people or something. And it really just was not playable. I had a cable modem, right? So I would try to host. And it still wasn't playable, but it took until this year that we figured out why it wasn't playable.
It was that one little menu option.
Oh my God. Yeah, because what it does, if you have that thing where I'm playing on the internet is checked, then it throttles your connection to 28K. Like 28K
is
bits.
That what that does?
Yes. That is exactly what that does. It throttles your shit down to 28K because it assumes that you're going to be on a 56K modem. Yep.
No, wait. Oh, how'd you find that out? How'd you find that out?
Wireshark, baby. Yes.
What?
Wireshark.
Nice.
You can do packet
capture. Doing some personal investigation. That's
right.
Pretty cool.
I just wanted to see what was happening. So, you check that box and it's like it throttles. It's like trying to shove a TIE fighter through the eye of a needle. And it's not working. Yeah. So that's what happens. So you uncheck that thing, and it's like, boom, cable modem, activate. And then you're good. It's glass smooth. But, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But we also didn't have really good voice communication back then.
Oh, God.
Or anything. And, like, there was really no kind of central anything, really. I mean, didn't this use a service? Did this use any service back in the day? Like M-Player or whatever?
Nope.
I don't even remember.
It was Direct Connect right from get-go.
Yeah, that's what it says, Direct Connect. Because, you know, there was a lot of tweaking, I think, I had to do at one point to try and even get to, like, work with some of the newer technologies not too long after it came out, even.
Yeah, like, the 3D acceleration was kind of sketchy, you know? Even if you had a 3DFX, 3DFX.
Yeah, and it will absolutely not run for me in 3D.
Oh, no, me neither. I try and run it in 3D, and a little thing comes up. Oh, can't run it in 3D. Here's 2D. Thanks.
Are you running Windows 8 or 7?
No, 7.
Okay, because the reason that it's busted is, in Windows 8 at least, is that Windows 8, even in the compatibility transformation layer stuff, cannot handle a pure 16-bit video color scheme, right? It's 32 or nothing, right? So what it'll do is it tries to upscale the 16 to 32 so that Windows can deal with it, and it doesn't. And then that is why, if you turn 3D on, you crash. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, so at least for Windows 8 people. I think Windows 7 still could do 16-bit, but there is a thing, like if you right-click and go to compatibility on a program, yeah. I will do so just so that I can speak to it. So you go to compatibility, and then you can go to reduced color mode. You can take it down to 8-bit or 16-bit, but that's turning the transforming thing on. So it's for whatever reason, this game throws out like some raw 16-bit that doesn't upconvert. So, yeah. So what GOG did, I don't know, but they didn't get the 3D working. But you know what? I find actually when we play it, what res are we playing? 1024, something like that?
No, not even. Like 640.
640 by 480, I think.
Yep, 640 by 480. That's what we're playing.
Gnarly. I thought it would go higher than that, but...
No.
You know, a thing that I did find, though, is whenever you run the original TIE Fighter in DOSBox and you upscale it, like, full screen, I can actually run my screen at, like, you know, 1920 by 1600. And it will upscale to that, or 1920 by 1200. Yeah, and all the jaggy goes away, man. It's like beautiful. It's almost like it's natively that res. But I can't do it with this. But if I could run this,
speaking of DOSBox, man.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about that whole NVIDIA Shield thing?
You were in the process of trying to get stuff running, and yeah, because you showed me that video where the guy was actually running TIE Fighter on an Android tablet.
Why? Yeah, like the old school TIE Fighter, this guy was running the original TIE Fighter in a DOSBox app, like on his Android tablet or something like that. Pretty crazy. I'm going to try and see if I can't get that to work.
So did you try it on your Shield?
I need to, because the thing is the Shield's got all those nice handy-dandy buttons.
Because you know what? If you get that to work, you've sold me on a Shield. I mean, the fact that you told me it can emulate stuff and I want to have it emulate a Dreamcast, yeah, you might have sold me on a Shield. If you get that working, let me know.
Yeah, honestly, this JXD that I got, kind of wish that I'd got the Shield instead. Yeah. Because I got the like extra big JXD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, by the way, we're not looking at TIE Fighter on your screen.
I know.
It was part of the night where it went somewhere else.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, all right. So, as soon as the video popped up, it was like, I'm looking at Game Ranger, and it's like, what?
No. This is a video from...
Gotcha.
This is a video from a week or two ago.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully when we were doing well. There was a couple of those... Wow. Some of those missions, man, my God. I have to go back and play some of this shit single player to see how it is even possible that the AI wingmen deal with the stuff that they throw in here. Because
That's the thing. We should have a show about that, about puzzly space games. I want to do a show about that. Why don't we? Because there are a good amount of them. All the X-Wing games, for example, the IWAR games. IWAR
1 was terrible with it.
Oh God! Oh yeah, I know. And you know what? It's the thing. Like sometimes it'll work sometimes, but other times it won't. It's kind of interesting how like it's like if they put the curtain down and they give you the illusion that you have control.
Yeah,
the illusion that you have freedom. You're all right, but when that curtain comes up and you see that you're playing a fucking Rubik's cube, you just want to flip the table. Because God damn it. So we should talk about that. I'm going to make that a topic for an upcoming show is puzzly space games.
Yeah.
Because God damn it, that gets annoying.
Yep.
But
I want to point out for the TIE Fighter thing, because I found this old article from like 1999 on Gamma Sutra, and it's called "The Internet Sucks" or "What I Learned Coding X-Wing versus TIE Fighter." It's by Peter Lindcroft, who did a lot of the programming on it. He did a lot of games, but X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter was the end of it. So I guess he just walked away from gaming or something at that point because hasn't developed anything since, at least according to...
I think I read that article.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sad article.
Well, what he's saying here, though, is very interesting, especially for 1999, as cable modems were just starting to to get some uptake, right? But he's talking about, you know, like even 100 milliseconds of latency would make your controls unusable. So what they did is they basically, maybe it's the first time that anybody had done this, where they use flight path prediction. And it's just like, well, he's going this way, and if he continues going that way, you know, then he'll be here in you know, 200 milliseconds or whatever. So it would plot ahead, and then it would make adjustments. And that's why whenever you're playing with the bandwidth throttle stuff on, then stuff jerks around a lot.
But it's just I mean, it's amazing. That sounds incredible. Yeah, I remember reading about that because, I mean, what other kind of multiplayer space game really offers this right now even?
Yeah, you know, the other game that I would really like to try out that has co-op like this in it is Free Space 2. And I think we can do it.
Maybe. It looked a little complicated, but we can try.
Yeah.
We can definitely try. I just finished the campaign of that again. Oh, my God. Just broke my heart again.
This is very interesting. I'm watching, going back through this. It's reminding me of like when I first kind of got into the genre of the space sim stuff, because I came in late to the game.
Oh, okay. When did you come in?
Well, I came in because I'm also considerably younger than you guys.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Ah!
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
So you're like,
Grandpa, what are these floppy disks? That's TIE Fighter.
No. Like, my brother, fortunately, though, who's like 12 years older than I am, he's in his early 40s now, he was very much into computers and showed me a lot of the ropes when I was a kid. And the first one I eventually got into was X-Wing Alliance. That was my first entry, which was like the last tail end of like the 90s of games.
The worst of them. You came in at the end. Oh, that's so sad.
and I actually got into X-Wing Alliance, and funny enough, I know Brian hates the story, but
no, not the whole story, just the family stuff.
At the beginning, yeah.
Oh God, yeah. It's horrible. Once you get past that, not a bad game.
Once you get to Disc 2, you mean?
Yeah. Once you get to the Rebel stuff.
Yeah. So, but when I got into this genre, and then a few years after that, like in the early 2000s, there was online communities like Darksaber's X-Wing Station and stuff like that, where they had all these high-res models, and they added in tons of extra ships, and I'd go to LAN parties with guys, and we'd play X-Wing Alliance at LAN parties with like all these upgraded ships and add-ons.
That's why you're kind of keen on Alliance's multiplayer.
Right, but I also had no access to X-Wing versus TIE Fighter then. And then when I finally did, I realized that the campaigns, the co-op campaigns, were pretty much the shit.
So. Yeah, I'm surprised how good they are. You know, they're very tough, but I'm surprised how good they are. I mean, I shouldn't be, because X-Wing and TIE Fighter had excellent, obviously, campaigns. But to make a good story-based campaign work like that with multiple players, that's something. That's a feat, I think. And it just works really well. I mean, even the interface stuff for this game, like, I love how, like, commanding a wingman to target another craft just has you hit the space bar. You're targeting that craft. Just simple. Effective. Yeah, just it amazes me how wrong I was for so many years about this game.
dude, Shift F, it's got
Shift F. God.
Oh my God, I know.
Because that brings up the list of all the ships, and it shows what ships are targeting what other ships.
Yeah,
right? in a nice list. Yeah, and it shows which one you're targeting. So. And you can do it for friendlies, you can do it for enemies, so you can kind of see, like, what all your friends are actually shooting at, and then if it's like, oh, who's attacking the primary target, you can look, which is something you could never do in one of these games, and then they got rid of an X-Wing Alliance, which is most unfortunate. Oh,
this is a really good point. Someone in chat was just talking about most modern games don't even do co-op campaigns well.
Yeah,
and I agree with that. Like I can't see a game right now that has this level of co-op to it. Other than like, I don't know, Left 4 Dead, you know, but like that's stupid. Like I'm not even, that doesn't count.
No,
Yeah, there's very few things that actually have a single player thing that you can then bring a second person in. The last good one, shockingly, was Transformers.
Which Transformers?
The original Transformers, I know, did it. Don't own the well. It's like Battle for Cybertron. Now Fall of Cybertron.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I just got those the other day.
Yeah, you
they
can totally
on real deep sale
there because whenever you play the game, it'll be like you and a couple of wingmen, you know, AI bots that go and mm-hmm. do things, and it just lets another player be that bot instead of it being AI. But it's still your game. It's just somebody else is in there helping you. So it's your save game kind of thing. Yeah. It's really cool. We ought to do that sometime, actually, because it's hella fun. It's much better.
I own it. Yeah. I own it. I've been meaning to get into it. So,
you know, the multiplayer in that game, I wonder what's going on with Fall of Cybertron, because War for Cybertron had some really fun multiplayer, but the community just didn't gel. So, it's one of those things like, this game's pretty awesome, and then you go back a month later and there's like five people playing it. And it's like, ugh.
Kind of like Hawken.
Oh, kind of like Hawken. You know a game I just actually came to mind that's had really good co-op, what Jim said kind of triggered, is the community kind of failed on it, but Guns of Icarus had...
I've heard that's really good.
Well, it had a really cool system in place where it was like you and a bunch of other players are manning a skyship against other players in skyships. And mm-hmm. you have to like coordinate together and you can be on teams of ships. And that was like the last one that I saw because you know you really had to work as a team in order to accomplish what you need to do. But the community, I feel like, kind of just went.
Just what?
It didn't go very far, sorry.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because of the level of complexity of the game. It's not like Left 4 Dead where you just jump in and start like banging the mouse buttons, right?
Payday, apparently.
Yeah, but you have to know what the hell is going on in the game, right? It's like the ship's on fire. What do I do? You know, and if you, it's one of those deals where if you have a pickup game and there's a couple of people that don't know what the hell they're doing and they're just like running around in circles, you're gonna lose. So that gets really frustrating to people and ends in name calling and noob shaming. But, you know, I think the game would have benefited from like a hella tutorial at the beginning or something. The game right now that would have just an absolutely beautiful co-op experience is if they made like a MechWarrior game and just had AI bots, and then you could just drop another player in there. Very much like the Cybertron thing, you know, because remember the old MechWarrior games, like MechWarrior 4? You could just just throw another couple of players in there, whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you can't, but I'm just saying if you could, that would have been a prime candidate for this. But a lot of games, they tack multiplayer on because reviews say that we have to have multiplayer, right?
Yeah.
Or people won't buy it. And it's like, whenever you look at the numbers, right, like, you know, Steam puts out their reports and stuff, and they're like, this many million people own the game, this many thousand people actually played multiplayer. And it's like, wait, you know, like Call of Duty, right? It's like the ratio of people that buy that game to the people that play multiplayer in that game is shocking. Because I would have thought, like, everybody buys it for the multiplayer. Like, I don't even play the single-player campaign. I go straight to multiplayer. And apparently I'm in the vast minority. So, right. And that's why people are bitching, because the game, you know, it's like, oh, the game's only 5 hours long. It's like, no, it's hundreds of hours long. Just hit that multiplayer button, and that's where the real game is. This is like tutorial for that. So
That kind of annoys me, though. Like, if you're going to make a single-player game, just focus on that. You know, if you're going to make a multiplayer game, just focus on that. Yeah, I think it's very difficult to find that balance. And the weird thing is, X-Men versus Spellfire, getting back to this, kind of has that balance. I mean, you can play anything solo, and it's fun.
Yeah. So the by the way, the call quality just drastically changed. I don't know if Hunter, does he sound weird to you?
You all do, to be honest with you.
Yeah. How about now?
Recording?
It's working now.
Hunter, are you there?
It's working.
Hi. Okay. I'm just going to say a little thing real quick. Folks, sorry about whatever was just happening. I had some internet issues that seemed to have resolved themselves, but I was streaming some video of just us playing X-Men versus TIE Fighter, but I had to stop that. I don't want to tempt fate. So yeah, just a weird break, but we're going to resume our discussion of X-Men versus TIE Fighter because it's turning out to be a surprisingly strong game in the series. I think it's probably my second favorite now behind TIE Fighter at this point. I'll be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
So, cause I mean, X-Wing is great. It got the ball rolling. Sure. But I have a hard time going back to X-Wing. You know, even in the X-Wing versus TIE Fighter engine, you know what I mean? I have a hard time going back to it. And I think there's two things that prevent me from going back to it. One is, have you ever noticed in TIE Fighter, when you have a target, you can see what it's doing on your little monitor, you know, in the middle of your thing. But with X-Wing, you don't get any of that. It's just like a static display. Remember that?
Well, yeah.
I can't go back to that now. You know what I mean? I just can't go back to that now. Even the updated Windows 95 version, which is weird, has that. It's like they wanted to keep it pure or something.
What, so it's like the display from the X-Wing in the movie?
Yeah, which is what it was in the original X-Wing game. And, right. You know, when that's all you had, and that's all you knew.
It's just like the other day I tried going back and playing the original Mass Effect again and, like, couldn't do it.
Well, the first Mass Effect was bad. I mean, it wasn't super bad, but it was bad compared to Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 1 just doesn't even exist.
Right, but, well, I mean, because graphically, it just was, it was different, and it didn't quite feel right, and then I was just like, God, I can't, because I was like, maybe I'll play through it again and try, like, a new thing and carry my characters over, and it just didn't feel right. So I understand where you're coming from, Brian, on not, like, feeling like going back.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I can't go back to Descent Free Space.
It's like watching 2001 A Space Odyssey. You watch it once, but don't watch it again.
Oh, no, I've watched that movie dozens of times.
What? Are you bored or what?
I love that movie. It's a beautiful, serene character study into the minds of humans and an AI that has been ordered to lie to the humans. And it's just fascinating.
So you have your weed with you when you do this, right? Like that?
No. You do have to be in a mood to watch 2001. You can't just pull that shit out. It's not like the other mood, day I was what?
mood being high? Like I'm sorry.
No. But like the other day I was like, I have some time to kill while all these movies upload to YouTube. I'll watch Captain America Winter Soldier again. That's a movie you can just pull out and watch a million times. Or Pacific Rim. I watched that a little while back.
Pacific Rim I can watch any given day.
Exactly. But with certain movies, like if I want to watch Lawrence of Arabia, for example, I got to be in a mood for that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just sit down and be like, what do I got to watch? I'll watch Lawrence of Arabia. It's only 18 hours long. I got time.
Yeah, what kind of mood is that, though? Like,
it's kind of like a mood where you're feeling pensive and you want something kind of slow and beautiful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
Like
there's a movie called Days of Heaven that came out in the late 70s, and I have the Criterion Blu-ray because I heard it was one of the most beautiful movies ever made. And it really is one of the most beautiful movies ever made. But I've seen it once, and even though I own the Blu-ray and I'm happy to own it, I never need to go back to that. There's no mood I could ever possibly be in to ever
where you need to consume that again.
Exactly. So now, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, though, Brian, have you ever thought about getting any of, like, the community mods or, like, any of that stuff to add other ships or anything like that to XBT?
Oh, I wouldn't be against it, but the thing is I worry that if we want to play over Game Ranger, doesn't everyone need that exact same ship?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But you can always put together, like, a community thing for Space Game Junkie, like the website, be like, here, download all this if you want to play with us.
That's true.
Or have two separate installations, you know.
Oh, really? That's true. I guess you could. I haven't really felt a need. And I guess in Game Ranger you could tell it you can specifically say which version you want to use. That's true.
Yeah. Well, because that's what I, like I was talking about with X-Wing Alliance, the model, like the HD model shit that they did for that, like,
oh, it's beautiful.
It changed the game, like, a lot. You're like, holy crap. And that's what I would really like to see. I was telling Jim the other day, I was like, I'd really like to see a mech sim game, and really in the sense of what you see with the X-Wing games. You know, it's full on joysticks, full on keyboard, like, you have to use all this stuff to. And I know, like, MechWarrior Online kind of has that a little bit, but it's too.
Well, you can go back to MechWarrior 2. Mercenaries. Or maybe the Earth Siege games. Maybe.
God, I haven't played the Earth Siege games since I was like.
I own them all on disc, because I'm crazy. But yeah, those options exist. You know, you just got to dig for them nowadays.
Well, I mean, like, it, you know, something new, though. Something, like, we were talking about this the other day. Jim, remember you were saying, could you imagine them making an X-Wing game in the Star Citizen engine? Like,
yeah, that would be pretty, you mean the, you know, that would be pretty swank.
You mean the Crytek engine?
Well, Crytek, excuse me, but whatever, like, they use for Star Citizen.
Yeah.
So, the Crytek engine, could you imagine, like, an X-Wing game that looked like that?
And it's funny, because for years I was like, you can't play that shit in a gamepad. But I have a confession. I've been toying around with Elite Dangerous on a gamepad.
How does that even work?
I might actually like it more than a joystick, guys.
How does that work?
The thing is, if I didn't have voice attack or head tracking, it might be a lot more annoying. But since I do have voice attack and head tracking, I don't even touch the keyboard.
Yeah.
Like, right out of the box, the gamepad pretty much works perfectly. Like, I had to change, like, one button. That was it. And it works. And it comes with two things. It comes with two profiles, like, one with yaw and one without. And I got the one with yaw. And it works great. I'm shocked at how well it works.
Now, not to diss the controller, but then doesn't that stop becoming a sim at that point?
I don't think so.
Well, it might.
My
problem with the gamepad has always been how touchy the gamepad is. You know, it's like you have to use such slight corrections, right, in order to. Yeah, that was the thing I didn't dig.
That's fair.
Because I just found it very difficult.
Well, it's weird. This just feels right with Elite. It feels really right. It's kind of scary. Like, I hate to admit it, but I might just start playing more.
So wrong, it's right.
It kind of is. I was playing the beta with it today, and I was like, this is great. This feels
playing
good.
Playing Elite Dangerous, the controller is wrong, and I don't want to be right.
I don't want to be right. I don't want to be right.
Well, you know, it's a thing, too, like with Enemy Starfighter, right, that T'Pol's working on. He took my joystick stuff out again. So, you know, he said he'll put it back whenever he's, like, done with development, but it's a pain in the ass for him to, like, keep up with, right? So, and I can understand that. Mm-hmm. However.
That game feels great with the game.
Really? Because I just have trouble with it. I need the fine control. Like, can you imagine trying to play X-Wing with a freaking gamepad?
Well, here's what I'm saying. Because I'm finding Elite Dangerous just fine with a gamepad, I could see a modern X-Wing or TIE fighter work with the gamepad
if
they did
it
right.
Oh, if it was built to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Elite Dangerous is what I'm saying, I think. Because I read somewhere that that's how Braben prefers to play it with a gamepad. So they really tried to make it work well with the gamepad.
Well, the old one
and,
used
like
to play
said,
with a keyboard, right? So, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or an old CH stick or whatever they had. Or whatever those really old sticks were, like Kraft. Wasn't that a Kraft?
Yeah, there was a Kraft. It came in the macaroni box.
So, no. There were really tiny joysticks.
It was like a little square stick with like a
little square base with a tiny little stick
and a
little bitty
and
stick.
A huge uncomfortable square red button with sharp corners. Yes, I do remember the Kraft stick.
Wow,
those things were a piece
of
shit.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
yeah, they were a piece of shit, but they were cheap. They were cheap. If you needed a cheap stick,
they were cheap because there was alternatives. At that point, but when they were the only game in town, that was like a $40 joystick or something. Yeah, they were not cheap. Because that was like the TRS-80 color computer and Radio Shack.
I had one of those.
Yeah, and so, those things were like, you know, craft stick right from the get-go. And then on the Apple II, that was the only kind of joystick you could get, too, for the longest. So, yeah.
Memories. Mm. Yeah, I mean, if they made it, I mean, they would pretty much have to make it. If they made a new X-Wing or TIE Fighter or X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, it would kind of be made for a game.
Absolutely, because nobody has a joystick right now. That's the problem.
Well, that's kind of changing, though. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but, like, joysticks are selling out left and right, especially that Thrustmaster HOTUS X.
Yeah.
Because of Elite.
Right, because...
basically.
Yeah, and I've got a bunch of friends that have been buying the SciTech X-52 Pro, and that model's been out for...
a couple of years. Yeah. At least a couple of years, yeah. And they're buying that up like
hotcakes. Well, maybe it was Hunter that was telling us, but somebody was telling me about people are playing Elite with two joysticks. You know, it's a ambidextrous Thrustmaster stick, and then they get one on either side, and they play it like they're playing Battlezone or some shit. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. I could.
That's apparently like the way.
But me.
I could kind of see that.
It's pretty freaky. Sort of. I must say.
Did you guys see that one throttle that some guy's making? It's like a total Z XY axis throttle that controls lateral and vertical thrusters as well. It's amazing. I kind of remember the name, but.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's great. But, I'm just loving how much fun X-Wing versus TIE Fighter is. And we're not even done that one campaign yet.
No. Nope.
We're not even done the Imperial campaign, and then we have the Rebel campaign to go through.
Yeah.
There's been so many times where we've had to play the same mission over a few.
I know. That is a staple of the X-Wing series.
That's a staple of 90s games, man.
Oh, that too. The 90s difficulty where, you know, oh, you can do it again. You've got time, right? You've got plenty of time. You can play this again. Sure you can, you bastard. now people don't tolerate that shit as much.
Well, that was actually something I was wanting to bring up, talking about those differences specifically between like a game like X-Wing versus TIE Fighter that when it came out at the time that it did, with those types of games that were out at that time with their difficulties. Yeah. And then you can compare that today with everything is, you know, push a button for this. Everything's kind of explained to you. You know, what was it? Shift F, right? That brings up that menu.
None of us knew about that.
No one has the manual. No one's looking this shit up. We figured it out. Like, no one's telling us these things in the game.
Gentleman, what was it, Baz, I think? Somehow that gentleman told us about that internet thing. And that totally made the game amazing.
We were going to bail out on it. It was just like, this is unplayable.
Yeah, we really
and
were.
And he's like,
this
oh, yeah,
terrible.
Did you uncheck that? Glorious.
We're like, what?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I had a little discussion over on my gaming forum that I run about, like, you know, the difference between, like, the modders and the DLCs of today and, like, all this other crap that's going on. I don't know, man. Like, it's really nice to see that you got some, like, developers that are actually trying to make really good, decent quality games, but they're, like, so few and far between. You guys seem to have had a few of them on your show, even, so.
Yeah. I am liking how some games are kind of sticking with that old school difficulty, but it works and it doesn't. Like, with Ethereum, it kind of worked, you know. But with Strike Suit Zero, it didn't really work. It's really frustrating. Because I wanted that game to work, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, so...
Well, there was, we were talking about that. There's a game coming out on Steam soon that's, like, a throwback to old 3D platformers, not, like, side-scrolling platformers. Such as Mario 64 and stuff like that. There's an actual game company that's working on a game right now that's going to be coming out on Steam that's going to do that, and it's going to, like, be that. They're saying it's, like, bringing back the N64, like, platforming feel again, but with, like, newer engine graphics and stuff like that. Like, platformers haven't been, like, that popular, at least in that kind of style, in a very long time.
They are becoming more and more popular. Like, well, Spelunky, I think, helped with that. Wasn't there one that was really popular last year? Oh god, what the hell was that platformer called? Oh, everyone was talking Shovel Knight.
Oh yeah. Shovel Knight's awesome, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So, Shovel Knight. Apparently everyone loved it.
What
that
made
one.
Shovel Knight really special is that they decided to at first, I mean they got over it and did it a little different toward the end, but at first they limited themselves to the specific things that a Nintendo could do versus could not, right? So you couldn't have a diagonally scrolling background. It could only be left to right or up and down, stuff like that, you know, and then like the sprite right. things and that. So because of the limitations that they put on themselves, then they ended up with a very classic game that feels like the old stuff. But then at the end, they were just like, okay, no, we gotta really go for a little more bling here, right? So they broke the rules a little bit, but by that point they were very committed in, so it worked out quite well. If you haven't played it, play it.
I haven't. Platformers aren't typically my thing unless there's a roguelike element to it that randomizes everything. Then I really like them. I don't know. I'm weird like that. Like, I can't stand static platformers, but give me a Spelunky or a... What is that ninja one? That amazing soup? What is that amazing ninja platformer roguelike thing? Oh, God, what the fuck is it called? That one's incredible. I love it. Yeah, I can't. Super House of Dead Ninjas.
Yeah. That one's cool.
That game's incredible. And hard as fuck. But great. So it's weird. Like, sometimes I miss that old school difficulty, and sometimes I don't. You know?
Well, I guess difficulty is... It's kind of relative. I guess what I'm coming from is a game that doesn't just like lay it out for you and is a bunch of quick time events and push buttons to like mourn for your fallen comrades. Like that, like less of that kind of stuff. Because like Halo 4, for example, you know, the boss fight was nothing but a push button to beat the guy, like battle. And I don't like that. I want something that's more of a challenge to me than just push button to win.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, or like, you know, push button to open up door. Like, well, let me like walk up to the door. You know, Half-Life 2 never had a push button to open up door like icon. It just was like walk up to the door and see if it opens. So it kind of makes you feel like you're really in there, but if you keep having these prompts on screen, it kind of takes you out of that immersion, you know?
Right. So, but I guess going back to X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, it still kind of has that old school puzzly, sometimes annoying difficulty, but it's weird. When you're with friends, it doesn't feel as annoying. Maybe because it's like when you fail, it's like, oh, we all failed.
Yeah, we're in this together.
We all suck. So let's try again. What do we learn from this time that we can do for next time? It's weird how much content that game has. Like when I first started playing, I'm like, it's only got battles. It's only got some melees and shit. It doesn't. It's got a lot of shit to it, even without the campaigns. It's just a surprising game. And I think people still are writing it off because it's neither X-Wing nor TIE Fighter, you know, and they think it's only multiplayer and blah, blah, blah.
So,
and I kind of feel like an evangelist for it now in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, where did they go wrong with Alliance? Is it,
Well, the family missions, for one thing.
Well, was, yeah.
But I think we need to fire up Alliance in multiplayer because
it's not as good. It's not as
yeah.
The thing with multiplayer right. and Alliance was is like there's really not campaigns that you can do. They're custom scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's not like, hey, we finished this one, now it's gonna give us the next one, and we click OK for the next one, and then we finish that.
There's so no like progression,
Right. You get done with one scenario and then you load up, you know, you find another scenario and you load it up. And there's a bunch of custom made scenarios. But there's no like story or campaign that you play through together. But the dogfighting is still fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh and yeah,
and the ship choices are like twice as many.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that the X-Wing upgrade project, the XW XWA upgrade. They had it working for a brief moment, and then they realized that there was something like tragically wrong. So then they took it offline, and they were like, "It'll be back up quick." But it's been quite some time. Yeah.
Well, it's because of the GOG version. Something to do with the GOG version that they had to take it offline. Because I've used the XWA before the GOG version. So if you have like the old discs and you want to like fire up the old discs and like try and get that shit to work. That stuff still works.
Mm.
Of course I have the old discs. Of course. But I mean the thing is even X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, even without the campaigns, it had these little like kind of mini engagements, I think they're called in the game, where they're like a string of three or four missions where even then you feel like you're making you feel like you're progressing in something. You feel like you're making progress in something. And that's I guess that's what bugs me about Alliance. It's just like, "Oh, that's just throw together another scenario." It's
right. Just, so, well, that was it though, Brian. Like you could do like a custom multiplayer like campaign, but it would have to be like scenario at a time kind of things. Like you'd have to like load up the next one, and then you'd have to go back into the menu and find it and like load the next one. There's no cutscenes. There's no
I'm fine without cutscenes, but I want some kind of, I guess I want even some modicum of progression, rather than like what feels like one arena fight after the
other. Yeah, see the thing here, it's like they have 2-player, 4-player, and 8-player. I fired it up. I'm looking at it right now. And so you can either play skirmish combat or skirmish melee, which so there's like 8-player complex co-op attack on a Star Destroyer. Right, stuff like that.
Yeah,
but there's no actual story happening. It's just like there's a Star Destroyer out there, go kill it, and you know other team opposes. So, true.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say X-Wing versus TIE Fighter has that too, but for some reason it feels a little more slipshod to me. And maybe because Alliance isn't fully geared toward multiplayer like X-Wing versus TIE Fighter is.
Alliance is more about a story. They had a major story that you played through, and then there was like multiplayer on the side.
Yeah, it's like an afterthought. It's like, oh, here's your meal and here's your side of ranch. And that's multiplayer.
And I think that's where X-Wing versus TIE Fighter is different, because it was like you had X-Wing and then TIE Fighter came out, and then none of those had multiplayer at all.
Right, exactly.
And then they came out with X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, which is like, we're going to take both of those and we're going to give you like multiplayer together, and there's some campaigns and stuff you can do. So it was like, it was more designed to be played with other people specifically.
Exactly.
As where X-Wing Alliance, some people didn't really like the story thing. I enjoyed it, but of course I was also really young when I played it, so maybe that's why I enjoyed it when I played it.
You didn't mind inspecting 20 crates or 20 whatever the hell that was, and then just have to do it again. And
right.
Then,
well, and the reason why is because as a kid I felt like, oh, I'm in Star Wars, like I'm doing this thing. Like,
yeah.
To me as a young kid, it made a bigger impact. As where like going back through it today, you're like, wow, this is like annoyingly tedious.
Well, here's the thing. It's also kind of not the game's fault. A friend of mine told me, I'm not sure how he has this knowledge, but he told me that LucasArts was kind of gearing so much toward episode one and games for that, that anything with the previous trilogy was kind of like, pooey, you know? And so apparently this Alliance didn't get anywhere near the love it deserved. Like, apparently its multiplayer was supposed to be a lot more robust and whatnot, and that just didn't happen. Apparently they were going to patch in better multiplayer later, and that just didn't happen, from what he tells me. Which is a shame, because you can kind of see the potential there, and you just look at X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, and you're like, there's a lot here that could have been in Alliance. Why? I mean, I guess the thing that Alliance has that X-Wing versus TIE Fighter doesn't is the multi-sector missions that you can do.
Yeah, that's true. Although I don't find that it really adds a whole ton.
It doesn't, but it does expand the scope a little bit. It's like, ooh, I'm jumping around. But that's really it, you know. And they do have a good and a nice no cockpit view.
Yeah.
which is nice. But yeah, I couldn't stand flying that freighter. That was terrible. That whole family, I wanted to strangle them.
Well, once I found that you could actually skip missions.
Thank God you found that, Jim.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. That was the best.
But wait a second. Let me ask you this. Why do you enjoy playing without the cockpit view?
Better visibility.
Well, yeah, but like, isn't the point of it? If you could turn off the cockpit in Elite Dangerous, would you?
Probably. Yeah.
Oh, that's the way. Awful.
Well, no, the way I see it is, I would love to imagine that I have a kind of ocular implant that's connected to the sensors in front of the ship.
Okay, so you're going with like EVE Online lore here, right? Like, there's a bunch of nanobots on the outside of your ship.
Sure, if you want to pull in the EVE Online, sure. But that's how I kind of imagine the no cockpit view. Because, I mean, Wing Commander 3 and 4 didn't have a cockpit view. Neither did 5, I think. I think they got rid of that after 2. And look at Free Space, the best of the best. No cockpit, you know. I mean, I'm glad they give you the option, but I like turning it off because I think Free Space 2 has spoiled me. Free Space 2 has really spoiled me in terms of presentation, in terms of organizing a cockpit. And so, yeah, if I have my druthers, I'll turn that shit off.
Interesting.
Do you leave it on?
Yeah, I guess I enjoy the immersion feel. Like, that's kind of where it is for me. Like, I enjoy, like, for example, I had this discussion with Jim on MechWarrior Online. I asked him, do you play in third person or first person? And he said, you know, he plays in first person. And I do because I like the feeling of it's like me. I'm actually the one inside the mech. You know, piloting
right. No, I get it. I mean, I do love a game where you're in the cockpit, but I also don't mind the option of turning that off if it's available.
I guess I can understand having options. I can agree to that.
Oh yeah, options are the best. But I mean, even a game without options, like there's no cockpit view in Free Space 2, and that game does not suffer for it at all. At least to me.
Yeah.
But some people probably think it does. Like, I want a cockpit.
Well, okay, so like in a driving game, I actually prefer to have the steering wheel and the dashboard there.
Is that because it helps with judging distance?
Yeah, it kind of helps. I don't know. Especially if I have head tracking on and I'm looking around, mm-hmm. I must have the cockpit mm-hmm. because otherwise I don't know what's in front of me. So yeah, with flight sims and stuff, if I'm doing head tracking, cockpit's on.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right. I mean, if there was head tracking in Free Space 2, for example, you might need the cockpit just for referencing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. But I'm new to the whole head tracking thing, so I'm not – I'm still getting used to that and how amazing it is.
Now, do you wear something with yours, like on your head?
I have a thing.
I wear exciting underwear. Jim, what?
Jim, you have the IR tracker, yes. Right, Jim? Yeah, Jim has a thing. The IR tracker, if I recall, it's three little LED lights.
Well, actually, not that thing. I use the thing that goes on a baseball cap, and the reason is because that thing with the little three LEDs that hangs off your headset is notorious about breaking. It's like the joint, the plastic that they used for it, it's got like a little ball joint, and the plastic is a very thin pin with a ball on the end. So all the stress gets on that pin, and it snaps. And so you look on Google, you'll find like pictures of people with duct tape wrapped around that shit and stuff. So it's just like, yeah, I'm not even going to go that way. I can just wear a baseball cap. Thanks.
Oh, okay. What is it, a light that goes on the baseball cap? I mean, how does that work?
It's actually three little reflectors. They're in like a triangle with the one in the back that's elevated. And then the other two are out on the brim of the hat, left and right edge. So then it can actually do full 6-degree motion tracking.
Oh, okay. See, the one I have, Hunter, cannot do full 6 degrees. It only does up, down, left, right. It's a small little magnometer gyroscope thing made by Elite Dangerous fans that goes on the top of my headset. It's very small. It's about the size of a Tic Tac.
So does it work super well? Does it ever get like out of calibration?
God, it's great. I mean, once you calibrate it, I mean, it goes out a tiny bit every now and again. But if in Elite, if you turn it, the nice thing about Elite is it has the head look toggle. You can turn that off and on, which is really nice. And so if you just turn it off and on again, it recenters. And so it doesn't happen very often, but what it does, you just recenter it. It recenters itself. Oh, okay. So I don't really have a
with the track IR, there's actually a specific button that recenters the track IR. So it puts it.
Yeah, neutral. This thing has a button too. This thing has a button too, but because it has, I think it's an accelerometer. I don't need to do that. But with the older versions that don't have one, you would need to push this little button on top. But I mean, the only weird thing about it is you can't use it right away. It needs to warm up for like 10 minutes. I don't know why. it's kind of weird.
It is kind of strange. I guess it calibrates its sensors or something.
Something like that. Like when you first plug it in, you got to let it warm up, and then you run an auto gyro bias thing to kind of center everything. And then once that's done, you just put it on your head, center it, and go.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's great.
So it's kind of like my quadcopter where I have to turn it on, and it has to be perfectly flat when you turn it on. And if it's not, it actually gyros itself a little bit wrong. So, yeah. I found that out the hard way, like the first time I tried to fly it when I had it a little bit of tilt on it, and I just could not get that thing to center. So,
well, the nice thing about this is it doesn't have to be centered when you plug it in, but when you hit the auto gyro bias button, it has to be stable for like 30 seconds while it's centering everything. But once you do that, you're golden.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really a wonderful little thing. It cost me about $80 for the whole thing. It's called ED Tracker, which is kind of funny because, you know, that could be a lot of things.
Yeah.
like, why would I need to track my erectile dysfunction? But
it's funny when people say ED. We've been so saturated with the commercials now that ED is now officially limp dick. So that's great. Yeah.
I know, but it's really wonderful. Now I got to get it working with other programs. Like I need to try War Thunder again now that I have this.
You know?
The sad thing about this thing, it works with Elite Dangerous right out of the box. Like it just seizes another joystick axis. Boom, done. Right? With Star Citizen,
yeah,
you have to run two programs and create an XML file.
Oh wow!
To get this running.
So I was going to ask you then, if you're using a controller and the head tracker, are you still using those sweet new pedals that you just got?
I was when I was using the HOTUS. I'm still getting used to them, but for the last couple of sessions, I used the controller and it felt great. Yeah. So,
hey, did you click that video link that I sent you where the guy's doing he's got both joysticks and he's actually guiding the thing into the. He's landing with two sticks in Elite Dangerous. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And the first video that I sent you is he's got two identical sticks, which is this Thrustmaster 1600s, which is weird because they like light up like Tron. They've got that like greenish blue glow on them. Right. So, yeah.
Wow, that looks pretty crazy. How well that works. That actually looks really crazy. Oh my god. Okay, yeah, that actually looks kind of crazy how well that works. Why not? Won't have one joystick be like thrusters and throttle.
Yeah.
And the other stick be roll and pitch, and you're golden. Really? I could see that working.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that looks really impressive, actually. Not that I would do it, but...
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I have a second stick. I could hook it up. It's not really an ambidextrous, but I could check it out and see, you know, is this worth a thing or not?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the arcade version of Pod Racer.
Oh god,
never seen that. So,
oh, it's great. I mean, Pod Racer was like pretty much one of the only good Episode One games. Mm. I think we can agree, but the arcade version was fantastic.
Yeah, because you had to use both. You had to like use both the joysticks to like turn and maneuver, and There was even some cheat you could get for the N64 version where you would use two N64 controllers. I tried it. It was the hardest thing in the world. But you hold a controller in each hand with the joystick in the middle, you know, and you'd have to like, use those to like pilot the pod racer.
Oh, weird. So I found a ROM for the arcade machine.
What?
Pod racer. Arcade machine.
What does it work with? Does it work with
yeah,
name or
name
something?
ROM. It's only 4 megs.
Really?
Itty bitty. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Let me see what's the what here.
Oh, the pod racing game is great. I mean, Jim, I think you were right that the sequel is better though. I think.
Yeah. Pod Racer Revenge.
That's really excellent. But the first game is also still a lot of fun.
So shockingly. Yeah. So Pod Racer was. Were the controls okay? Yeah, so it was just up and back, so there was no left and right. So it basically steers like a tank. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, and the arcade was really like you sat in that it was made to look like Anakin's.
Yeah, well, this kid's playing a stand up one that I'm watching here, dude. It looks identical to the PC game.
What Pretty much.
Here? Yeah. Oh, here you go. This is someone who took a couple of throttles. And and hooked him up. Oh, check that one out. You'll like that shit.
What?
So he took two HOTUS X like T-Flight Thrustmasters.
He totally did it.
He totally did. Oh my god, he's got them. Oh dear, he's got them reversed. So one. Oh my god, he totally is doing.
That is amazing.
That's incredible. Oh, God bless people and the internet and.
Modders and hardware hackers.
Hackers. Just the stuff that you can do. Oh, look at that.
If it wasn't, if it wasn't for people that didn't have shit else to do, then we wouldn't have the amazing things that we do.
I'm gonna save this in the podcast thing so I can totally add it to the notes. But that's pretty freaking great.
I think they had it wrong in Terminator. They were like, you know, in 1997 or whatever, the Skynet became self-aware. It was like, in about 2015, the internet became self-entertaining. It didn't need the humans anymore. It could entertain itself.
I always thought it was interesting that in 1997, the machines became self-aware, but in 1996, according to Star Trek lore, is when like the Third World War happened.
Yeah.
Or the Eugenics War or something.
Yeah, we were totally not doing that. So, but according to Captain EO, we had the Borg in like 85, 86. So,
oh my god, Captain EO again.
Yeah.
And somehow it all comes back to Kevin Bacon.
So how much X-Men versus TIE Fighter do you think we have? Like a few more months worth before we run out of content?
Oh god, I don't know, man. How many missions a night are we going to do? And
it
you know, that's the thing. It's like if they're long or something, then yeah.
And how many of the custom missions are we gonna go out there and grab? Maybe I'm sure there's some community made stuff.
Oh, you know, we need to look into that. God, that rabbit hole could go pretty deep, especially if there's a mission editor. Holy crap, we could.
There is.
Oh, I've seen this site before. It's called the Emperor's Hammer Battle Center.
Oh, I thought it maybe it was like Emperor Palpatine's New Groove. But no.
Wait, what
talking
is
about
this?
The EmperorsHammer.org or whatever?
Yes. And they've got, oh my god, they've got, I don't understand what, they've got lots of missions for X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. Lots and lots.
Lots
of missions. Like 400.
Oh god.
Wait.
We could play this.
There's two.
We could play this game for fucking ever. Like.
There's 245 missions. And then there are battles with multiple missions in them.
I'm going to sell like all my other games because I don't need them now.
Right?
Games forever.
Holy criminy.
So the thing is, if you could make missions like this and stick them in X-Wing Alliance, how absolutely gorgeous it would be. Because I was playing Alliance while we were talking there. I just fired it up because I was looking at the missions, right? And I was doing that mission. It's like the second mission after you get over the family bullshit, where you've got an A-wing, and it's you and a wingman, and you jump in, and there's a whole Imperial convoy, right? Capital ships, and you have to weave around them and scan them. And then they start launching probes, and you have to chase the probes down and kill them. Meanwhile, TIE interceptors are like gnats all over the place. So, I took the graphics up to like 1600 by 1200, and it looks freaking gorgeous. And I cannot wait until we can get the Darksaber stuff in there, or the, you know, X-Wing Alliance upgrade ships, because it'll just look mind-blowing. So,
yeah,
and then we just need a widescreen mod, and we're there. It'll be 2015 again.
Oh, man. I got to figure out how to install these.
I just don't understand why the frick nobody has made a clone of this game yet. It doesn't even need to be a TIE fighter. It just needs to be, like, some other ship that doesn't even look like a TIE. You know, it could be whatever, right? But fly the same and just be, you know, a non-Star Wars property, right?
They did that though with X-Wing Alliance. Like, I remember they put in like Battlestar Galactica Vipers and stuff like that, models that you could get.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, whole new game, right? And the Free Space 2 stuff has kind of taken over, right? But Free Space 2 does not make a good TIE fighter, I don't think. It's just not the right engine for that. But
no,
Free Space 2 does Free Space 2 stuff amazingly. But the TIE fighter thing is a whole different feel. You need like a thousand frickin' green laser bolts flying out of a Star Destroyer. Well, you know, it's a whole different animal. So.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to figure out how to install these missions and stuff, cause yeah, we could be playing X-Wing versus TIE fighter forever with this. I mean, I don't even understand what this all is. Like, what is X-Wing versus T? What is XVT-TC? What is XVT-IW?
TC is total conversion.
Okay, and what is IW?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, I don't know what these...
Can you link that page that you're looking at?
Hang on. Yeah, I don't understand how this works. But there are lots of missions for X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. I just don't know... I don't know what by platform means. Oh, that's a lovely shirt,
Jim. I know, right? It's gorgeous.
Can you buy it?
I'm trying to find out right now.
But yeah, I don't know how to install.
Oh yes.
These missions.
$14.99, but it only comes in XL, which will not do us any good.
You have to download a launcher to do it.
Might make it easier.
Yeah, you have to download a launcher. So let me try this.
Question is, though, will this stuff work with the GOG version?
I'm about to find out.
They have Jedi Academy 3 stuff in here.
Yeah, wait, what? Jedi... Oh, God. They do.
They have some Galactic Battleground stuff.
That is crazy. That is nuts. I can't read me. This was made in 2003? What?
XVT-F, 245 missions.
I know. And then you've got a bunch of battles that are not even, they are groups of missions. They're like not even single missions. They are groups of missions, which is just amazing.
Wow. So it's like, welcome to the free missions, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter battles. Select a battle from below for more information on it. And it's like,
yeah, there's a lot for X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Quest number 1 through 14.
Yeah, I mean if you look at these battles, they're multiple missions. Like this battle has 4 missions, and this battle has 6 missions, and this battle has 8 missions. And that's beyond the 245 missions you could get just alone. Like what?
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of fun up ahead as soon as we start adding in and modding all this shit.
I got to figure this out. And I just downloaded... There's a launcher you have to download to do this. So let's see if I can... You have to download the battle launcher. Interesting.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, click that link I just stuck in there. That can be yours for $23.
Interesting. What the hell? Wow, it'll launch. What the fuck? Load battle. Oh, God. Interesting. So you load. I'm not sure if this is going to work multiplayer. Because you got to load the battle from this launcher.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Because you can't. Well. It's got to be some way of doing this.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a way to work this. I mean, if we could work this, that'd be amazing. If we could work this. We'll have to experiment. Sorry, guys, on the podcast. Now we're like, oh, my God, we just found this treasure trove of stuff for X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. Woo! You know, we're like running through a field.
Yeah, because all that same stuff that you're looking at for X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, they have an XWA-F1 that's 155 missions that's like pretty much similar stuff, but for X-Wing Alliance. So
yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
What does that even mean?
They just have TIE Fighter and just X-Wing stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to try and launch one of these, like, right now. So just hang on. All right, let's see. So we're going to load a thing. So now we got to load a battle. Nope. Yeah, because I'm not sure how this is going to work. But I'm going to try it. Why not?
Oh, by the way, TC stands for TIE Core.
Oh.
On here.
TIE Core?
Yeah, and then there's one called IW, which is Infiltrator Wing. And the F, just the F by itself, stands for free. They're free missions.
What?
Yeah, if you click on each one of those like links and read that at the top, it'll tell you what the little initials mean.
A link at the top?
Okay, so if you go back to the Battle Center page.
Yes. Okay.
And you click on like X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, XVT, TC there.
Sure, got it.
At the top, it'll say, welcome to the TIE Corps X-Wing versus TIE Fighter battles.
Yes.
And if you go back and click on the IW, it says, welcome to the Infiltrator Wing X-Wing versus TIE Fighter battle.
Oh. So those are just the people who've made the stuff.
And then XVT-F is, welcome to the free missions. So,
Interesting. Interesting. Wait a minute. Okay, so I just loaded X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter, this encounter, the Verpeen encounter. Let me see if I can find it in here.
If you read the welcome thing, it says, the Battle Center currently contains over 4,000 custom-made missions by members of the Emperor's Hammer Strike Fleet.
Oh.
But that's not just for X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter. That's for Galactic Battlegrounds, Jedi Knight 3, TIE Fighter, X-Wing, X-Wing Alliance, X-Wing TIE Fighter, and X-Wing TIE Fighter Balance of Power. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. I'm not seeing this thing listed in here, so I'm not sure if this is even working.
Well, we don't have to do it tonight.
No, I'm just playing around with it.
They also have a page for their servers that they play on.
Really? That's pretty impressive.
So they have servers that they play on? How does that work?
I'm reading it now. It's something different. They're doing mods for certain stuff. So it's Call of Duty 4 with a like Star Wars conversion, like Galactic Warfare mod. Uh-huh. What it is?
Hmm.
These guys are Star Wars nerds.
Yeah, these guys are. This is serious business. This is very serious business.
It's like if Space Game Junkie only specialized in, you know, Elite Dangerous or Free Space,
which is what.
Like that's all your site ever focused on was like one of those two genres.
That'd be crazy. Okay, I'm just trying to get this to work, and it doesn't. Like it's like it doesn't want to work.
Oh man, they even have their own store page where you can buy gear.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Buy EH gear. They have Emperor's Hammer gear for, like, patches.
Oh, dear God. That's kind of amazing.
You can, like, get patches for, like, your, like, flight jacket or whatever.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, they have a roster with, like, different positions.
Dear Lord. Yeah, these guys are intense. It's kind of awesome.
I think we got invited to play with these guys once.
Did we?
Feel like
oh,
it.
We
like
did. I think they might have jumped on one of my TIE Fighter videos. God, now that you mention it, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Oh God, I could buy a, I could buy an Emperor's Hammer tote bag.
Totes.
It totes my goats.
Oh, okay. I gotta figure out how to get this working. This is, I gotta figure out how to do this. But anyway, we should wrap this up.
We've been just yammering.
We've been talking a while.
Yep.
We've been talking a while. But folks, sorry for the technical difficulties I had earlier. I'm not sure what the hell happened there.
Internet's happened
pretty badly.
He was getting jammed by some Romulans. Romulan jamming was going on.
There's only one man that would send me the raspberry.
Wow.
Lone Star. But folks, next week, in a serious change of pace, we're actually going to talk about TIE Fighter.
What? How can it be? Yeah, I need to make some progress on that thing.
The host of the Upper Memory Block podcast, Joe, I don't know how to say his last name properly without butchering it, so I'm not going to right now. Macaroni? He's going to be coming on to talk about, because he's playing through it just like I am. And so we'll talk about that. So yeah, Jim, you got to play a little bit. Where are you still at Hoth? Is that where you are? But anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Sorry we couldn't do video this week. It was all messed up. But thanks for listening to our ramblings about lots of stuff, but most notably X-Men versus TIE Fighter. Please, if you have any questions, don't forget to hit us up at hail@spacegamejunkie.com. And if you like what you hear, don't forget that we have a Patreon campaign at patreon.com/spacegamejunkie. We're trying to make the site even better. So help us out. And thanks so much. Have a good night, everyone.